welcome to La Liga Weekly, where we focus on the derby that surely changes the course of the season. Girona nil, Espanyol nil. Oh, sorry, is that the wrong game? My mistake. I'll start again. We'll focus on the shock result that surely brings another contender into La Liga's title race. Elche 2, Celta Vigo 1. Okay, we'll do the Madrid derby and the tears of Diego Simeone when he realised how many points Atleti could have had if they'd played properly all season. Real Madrid will have to bounce back as they face some tough challenges. Firstly, figuring out where exactly is Kairat or Almaty. I've been trying to book a flight to Kairat, but there doesn't seem to be any. But it's definitely in Europe. And of course, they've got some big fixtures coming up in October. Maybe start working on the long throw routine, Xabi, because all that complicated stuff is out of fashion now. Take Barcelona, for example. Just get the ball in the box. See if one of the lads from the back or the big Polish fella can get ahead on it. And then we'll do the rest of La Liga, which won't take long because there weren't many goals, especially not from Athletic Club, who've already started their Champions League too much for us meltdown. Or from Rayo Vallecano, who are melting down about being in the Conference League. It doesn't even start till Thursday. Terry Gibson, a.k.a. the Analista de La Liga, is back from Madrid. He's got his fancy boards up behind him, as opposed to an old table tennis table that's now just a repository for junk that my wife likes to dump around the house. Yes, there we are. So Terry, nice boards. Terry is available on YouTube now, Analista de La Liga, or just Terry Gibson, if you want to find him. Yes. And so... I mean, obviously, we've got to. You're in Madrid. You're tantalisingly close to the Metropolitano Stadium. Or you were this weekend. Obviously, you're home now.
Yes.
Yes. You don't have to stay in Madrid at a hotel.
Just look out the window now. And...
Yeah. And right. So analyse that one for us. Unfortunately, it was my confession. I've only seen highlights of it because it was the 3:15 kickoff UK time, wasn't it? So we weren't allowed to watch it. In full. So I've got various questions for you about various people who were apparently terrible. But you give us an overview about, what happened. How did Atletico win this game 5-2?
Well, first of all, I didn't realise how close I was to the Metropolitano Stadium. And because I'm sort of in a dip in a hotel, then I walk up to the offices, we do where the studios are, do the stuff there. It wasn't until after the game I went back to the hotel to get a taxi to the airport. And Atletico Madrid support was parked near the hotel I stay in to walk to the stadium. I'm that close. So that was I had no idea what direction in Madrid where I am, where the stadium was. I was told I was close by, but you'd expect to see this massive stadium in a suburban part of Madrid. I hadn't. And then suddenly I thought, it's that direction because thousands of red and white shirts were walking away from the stadium. So we're that close.
So before you analyse the game, I'm getting slight stress about did you have to get the taxi to the airport at the same time everybody was leaving the ground?
Yes.
And
yes.
Did you get there? Obviously you got there.
I did have an adventure. The taxi was booked by the hotel and it was taken by someone else.
Right. Yeah.
Who claims they'd booked they were standing there with big suitcases and I was far too polite. It was 5 minutes early. And I thought, well, that can't be mine. They jumped in front, got it. And then I stood there waiting for another 25 minutes to get another one. Oh. So it wasn't easy, I promise you. But it was a pleasure to be in the city of Madrid. This is a pleasure to be asked to do the game, first and foremost. And it's one of the best games I've ever commentated on. It was in terms of the atmosphere, because of the context of the game, because there was this 9-point gap, which could go to 12, and Real Madrid were favourites going into the game. And you're looking at the consequences of me being foolish enough to predict that Atleti could win the league or would win the league. And I'd seen flickers of hope from Atleti in the previous win against Rayo Vallecano. And from a player's perspective and a coach's perspective, you need a flick of a switch to trigger the togetherness that comes with a new group of players. And let's face it, they've signed a lot of new players this summer and the second summer on the trot. And just by beating Rayo in those extraordinary circumstances, the late goal, the drama, the atmosphere, it was a home match, the crowd were involved, their input was important. And that gels together the group. And I've known that from my playing career and coaching career. You need something just to gel everyone together. So to take away that politeness, effectively, of new players trying to settle in without, in general, they don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to come and become, you know, give it the big one when they come into a new team and a new club. And then you consequently, you've got the other players who are already there that maybe are sort of a little bit apprehensive about keeping their place in the squads, in the team, in the starting lineup. And then you had that game against Rayo. It was only Rayo Vallecano, but it was the Julian Alvarez hat-trick, and it was a late win. And then suddenly you saw all the players coming together, the crowds coming together. So that was the only reason I gave Atleti a hope in this game. And I did wonder whether that would have the effect that we saw on Saturday. And of course, it needs the right team to be picked, which by and large Simeone got right exactly in this match. I did question a couple of substitutions. And we'll come to that as we progress in the analysing this game. But the way they started the game at a ferocious pace, and by the end of it, I'm looking at it and thinking, perhaps I wasn't a fool to choose Atleti as my tip for the title. The way they've turned around it now so that the gap isn't as it could have been 12. It started at 9. It's now down to 6. They've got a chance of doing that. And the way they played was an emphatic performance from them. It was a poor performance from Real Madrid. I've looked at all the reports. I've looked at all where the blame is being laid. And it's an interesting one. Real Madrid were going into this game on the back of 6 wins in La Liga and a win in the Champions League. I've been saying on the podcast since the start of the season, tougher tests were to come. This was their toughest test by far. And I was waiting for evidence of seeing, you know, new players, certain players, how they've been playing. It's so well and good beating Mallorca and Osasuna and Oviedo, not being put under too much pressure defensively. And the evidence was there in this game. So Atleti were superb right from the first minute. And it was basic stuff. Both teams kind of looked like a 4-4-2. Atleti were whacking channel balls down the flanks, and it was working to good effect. Every time they got the ball in the box, it looked a threat. Every time they had a set piece, they looked a threat. They were working faster. They were working harder. And yet, astonishingly, I mean, they get the first goal of the game, and it's coming. You can see it's coming. That was probably about their third or fourth half chance before they score after 14 minutes. And then out the blue, Real Madrid do what Real Madrid do. And that was where the argument lays now, where criticism was aimed at Ancelotti and Zidane that their coaching wasn't great, but they had great players that could win them the game. And now we've got Xabi Alonso, and the idea is, or the narrative is, he's a systems coach. Everything's going to be back, you know, Real Madrid are going to be better because they're not just going to rely on individual talent. In this game, they were. I mean, they found themselves 2-1 up. And I was looking at Xabi Alonso. I mentioned it in commentary that there'll be managers all over the world looking enviously at Xabi Alonso because his team are getting totally outplayed. But Arda Güler with a fantastic pass for Mbappe to get the equaliser. And Arda Güler, after good work from Vinicius, to put them 2-1 up. Out of the blue, with those two attempts on goal, which were their only two attempts in the whole game that were on target. And I was looking at it during the game thinking, Oblak hasn't made a save. And Real Madrid are winning 2-1 out of nowhere. That was purely down to the brilliance of Mbappe, Arda Güler and Vinicius. Poor defending from Atletico Madrid. Both goals are poorly conceded. So that was the only black mark on Atleti's performance. But so Xabi Alonso hasn't got to grips yet. And you're looking at the way that they're playing and you're looking at the system and you're thinking, well, is it this system? Is it that system? The same old issues. Is Vinicius playing up front? Is he playing on the left? Where's Jude Bellingham playing? Jude Bellingham seemed to be covering the gaps that Vinicius was leaving. So if Vinicius was on the left and they were closing down up front and Bellingham was going forward to join Mbappe with the high press. If Vinicius was in the centre forward position and Bellingham was going left. Carreras was playing really high up the pitch and he was one of those players that I was looking at to see, could they be tested? Housen, Carreras, can they be tested? Injuries went against Real Madrid, particularly in the first half. But as I said, I thought there was a stronger test to come for Real Madrid. I was waiting for the evidence, waiting to witness where they are as a group of players. And I don't think they're as bad as this performance and results suggests, but it does clearly, you know, give us evidence that although they've been impeccable with the first 6 games in La Liga and winning in the Champions League, when the big test came, they failed miserably on this occasion and Atleti were dominant. They were a joy to watch because of the atmosphere. The crowd enjoyed it. The Simeones performing like Simeones on and off the pitch. It was all round. It was a fantastic performance. And the, some of the new players are good. That's why I tipped them, because I knew some. I'd done some analysis on the players that they were signing, and my initial recognition of it was they're going to play with the same intensity as they have done in the past, but be able to do it quicker and faster because it's a younger group of players. So no Witzel, no Espiliqueta, and one or two others, and Rodrigo de Paul and Angel Correa. This group are younger. And this was the first time we saw that evidence that they can perform like that for 90 minutes, bombard teams with and without the ball. And they were absolutely superb on Saturday. Sorry if that was long-winded, but it was such a dramatic afternoon of football. It was a joy to be involved in.
Right, let's break down a couple of bits. Let's do the positives, and let's do Atleti's positives. Julian Alvarez, understandably getting, because he scored the hat-trick, two extraordinary goals in the three in midweek. And this was obviously a penalty, but also a free kick. That changed the game, really. And so we discussed a couple of weeks ago how he was unhappy. Was that after he got subbed? Was it Mallorca?
It's Mallorca, yes.
Yeah, and he'd been taken off at half time in the previous game. I mean, he has played quite a lot of minutes, hasn't he? I don't understand. Why did he? Yeah, I guess Simeone now is going to have to pick him. Does this nail down a little bit or not? Am I wrong? What if I just said Simeone has to keep a consistent team, but that's not guaranteed at all, is it? They've got Eintracht Frankfurt, and who knows what team he'll put out. But surely Alvarez is playing so well, he has to be number one.
Yeah, the story came about because he got taken off against Mallorca, and he sat on the bench and he said, "Siempre me, always me," and he got picked up by the cameras. I can sense that frustration. It's not the worst petulant outburst you'll ever see, shaking his head. He just mouthed it to himself. He wasn't shouting at Simeone, "It's always me." So that made headlines.
Yeah.
There have been rumours of other clubs being interested in him, and that is probably because of he's not unsettled, but people can make a case for him being unsettled.
Yeah.
Because he wants to be the star. It's the reason he left City. Yeah. You know, he wasn't playing on a regular basis. When he did, he played in different positions. You can recognise his talent. Now he's gone to Atleti. He wants to be, and not in an egotistical way, he wants to be an important player for his team, and he is. I mean, he's a gifted footballer. Penalty, I think it was. The Real Madrid media arguments are that it wasn't. That Güler touches the ball first, but it's a foul. If that's on the halfway line, it's a foul, and no one would complain, would they?
They've taken the giving. It's given as a penalty now, isn't it? I'm not convinced. But also head the ball. I know in his case it's little, but one of the problems that Real Madrid had was not heading the ball.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And they're our big team as well. Mm. And they got bullied when it comes to winning headers. So I don't think there was a cause for complaint from Real Madrid on that, when Aldo Gula puts his head up and he kicks the opponent in the face. I think it was Nico Gonzalez. It's going to be a foul anywhere on the pitch, so therefore a penalty. The dramas around the penalty is because Julian Alvarez had the two-touch penalty last year in the Champions League. So you're thinking, is he going to keep his composure? He does. Mm-hmm. By that time, Soloff had put them back level. He is an important player for Atletico Madrid. He gives them a presence up front that I always feel Simeone team needs. And probably I'm crazy in thinking of Diego Costa. And Atleti were at their best when he was involved in the team. A physical presence, someone's getting them the crosses. They've always been a team that likes to get balls in the box and play off a big striker. So he was excellent. His goal was good. I mean, the no man's is determination and aggression, attacking a header. As you said, Real Madrid struggled on that. Soloff struggled. They struggled to contain Soloff with his header. It was classic centre-forward play. Great cross by Koke. And we have to give Koke a mention, which I will do shortly. Then Alvarez with the penalty. Then the free kick was sensational. Wonderful free kick. And then that's 63 minutes, and it was time to hook off Soloff and go into defensive mode. And I thought, why? It's very early. Hmm. You know, it's you've gone 4-2 up. You're playing really well. There was the potential there for huge criticism, because against Real Madrid with half an hour to go, it's not done. But why are you on top and you've got the momentum, then to retreat and go to a defensive system with Griezmann up front, it kind of sort of left you thinking, well, they've got to win now, otherwise he's going to get slaughtered for this. They did hold on. Griezmann comes on, Alex Baena comes on, they combine for the fifth goal, and that just kind of put an exclamation mark on the whole performance and the whole result. But right. Simeone could have this with 2-goal advantage going into defensive mode. But in fairness, Real Madrid didn't have an attempt at goal. They didn't end up scoring again. They were a beaten team.
We need to talk about Real Madrid then, really, with that bit of analysis. Lots of people I see comparing it to the PSG game at the World Club Cup, and basically saying they've had two tough games and they've got hammered in both of them. Is that harsh? Understandably, you've been a bit reluctant to sort of commit to how well you think they're doing, because it is still September in previous weeks. But it's not a good thing, is it? With a lot of good, tough games coming up. I think they've got Juve to come, then they've got the Clasico, and then Liverpool, all pretty quick in succession.
And it's that cursed right back position, isn't it? I mean, it's Trent Alexander-Arnold is out. Carvajal's going to be out for a month now. Militao picked up an injury and had to be replaced at half-time. So that didn't help them. I mean, I'm talking about this back four. I mean, midfield, go through the back four, first of all. Carvajal plays right back and he plays well, but he did pick up the injury and he's going to be out for a month, I believe. So he's going to miss some of those big games that you said. Trent Alexander-Arnold probably isn't going to be back as well. So Raul Asensio at right back, I'm not convinced. And I know Fede Valverde was delighted that Xabi Alonso seemed to have other ideas about who to play at right back. It'll be Fede Valverde again. Hmm. Now Bellingham's back, this is the added midfield player. I'm pretty sure Fede Valverde would play right back. So that it unsettled them. Militao going off and stuff like that. It's not ideal when you're playing against an opponent who are playing so well that Atletico Madrid's were. You need your best players on the pitch. They didn't have them. And it was a makeshift back four in the immature, mainly dropping into centre-back, Asensio over right-back. So there's valid reasons why they weren't at their best defensively. I was surprised Jude Bellingham started, I have to be honest, and not because of his quality. And I think if the plan was for him to play in Atletico Madrid, I think it was a failure from Xabi Alonso not to play him longer against Levante initially. And then the next game as well, where he came on and got 20 minutes in the last game. But against Levante, he came on for like 3 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes. And I think I've got the games the right way around. Levante was the midweek. He came on longer in one. He came on 2 or 3 minutes against Espanyol. That was pointless. Midweek against Levante, 15, 20 minutes. I thought there should have been a plan of 15, 20 minutes against Espanyol and then another 30 minutes against Levante. Didn't happen. So I was surprised, less than 20 minutes this season, to take that risk against Atletico Madrid. I was surprised that he started. So as I said, midfield was an issue. Fede Valverde was quiet. Bellingham was doing what he does. I didn't see a clear shape of midfield players. Tchouaméni dropped in between the centre-backs a lot, early as well. So at times you're looking and thinking, is it a three-man central defence? Kind of a hybrid. So I thought in the games leading up to this, the midfield shape of Real Madrid is an issue. And I think it needs resolving. One or two people are blaming the front players for not closing down quick enough. But if you don't lock down that midfield shape, those attacking players are not going to be able to close down on their own, being backed up, if they're not backed up by midfield players playing in the position. Arda was fantastic, but I'm not entirely sure where he was playing. And it was kind of wide on the right. Bellingham and Tchouaméni kind of in the midfield. And it was a weird setup from Real Madrid, which doesn't lean itself well to, well, you got the two up front. That's our first point of defence. You start closing down. We'll back you up with players on the left and players on the right. And two men in Valverde in midfield. Bellingham might be on the left. Tchouaméni in central midfield. There doesn't seem to be a shape in midfield. And you can't ignore midfield I know we have this issue of playing out the back and going long and then playing from there and stuff like that. But you can't ignore the midfield. I mean, up front is the most important part of the team, the attacking part, the centre forwards. But you need an engine room. And Real Madrid, they have the players, but I haven't seen evidence that they have the engine room dynamic in there that they're showing so far this season. They haven't needed it until this game. They dominate teams. Alvaro Carreras and Dean Howson have been superb, but we've judged them on possession football. Mm. We haven't judged them defensively. Then Sunday at the weekend, Giuliano Simeone is tearing apart Carreras. Howson is struggling against Sorloth. As I say, it didn't help. You had two young players and then two injured players, and you're changing your back four. So I'll give that reason to Real Madrid. But it was a really impressive performance from Atleti, and a lot of questions asked. Signs of Vinicius being better, and Mbappe is brilliant, but barely was involved in the game other than the goal. But he does give you a chance, and that's what Real Madrid have lent on this season, with him getting 8 goals so far in the Liga, goals in the Champions League. They are still a team of wonderful players that are going to rely on individual moments of brilliance. Is that going to change? We wait and see.
Mm, yeah. And they're going to get the coach to Almaty now, which is going to take 4 days.
I can't believe it's an 8.5-hour flight.
Yeah, yes. A long way away.
Astonishing for domestic European football competition.
Yes, definitely in Europe. But
that's the last place you want to be going. I imagine all the clubs in the Champions League this year, that was the one game you don't want.
Have a look. They've got data on all the players' physical state. Are you genuinely tempted to leave Bellingham or Mbappe or someone?
It's a 17-hour round trip.
Yeah.
Before their game at the weekend. They've got the win at home.
Yeah.
Do you send the beat, play Gonzalo Garcia and some of the others and send the younger ones? I don't know if they've got enough players to do that. I think they'd all have to go. So if they all have to go, then you may as well play those players. The trip is going to be worse than the match. They can't send the shadow squad. They haven't got enough players.
Yeah,
no one has. So you have to name players in the squad.
A couple of key players left out. It was Villarreal at the weekend.
It's a problem. Mm. As I say, it's not just the trip there; it's back. It's 17-hour round trip. They travel in comfort. I know that, but it's time spent in the area isn't ideal for the weekend. So it probably isn't going to be a tough fixture. Although Cardiff did knock out Celtic in the playoffs, so they're pretty decent. They'll have home advantage. They'll be up for it against Real Madrid. Real Madrid are going to have to find the motivation from somewhere to get a result.
Yeah.
And avoid the criticism of losing to a team from Kazakhstan.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be tempted to find a little thigh strain for Mbappe, and give him a couple of days in the health spa. Right. One more thing on this game, Clement Longley. And heading the ball.
Oh, yes. I was astonished. I'm reluctant to criticise, to be honest, just for the sake of it. But what was he doing?
Cross comes in. He scored, in inverted commas. They disallow it. It's disallowed because he puts his hands in front of his face.
Exactly. I know. It was bizarre. And it was when I saw the replay, I thought, because when it went in, muted celebrations, which led you to believe that they know that this isn't going to be allowed. You know, one of the teammates has seen a handball. We wasn't sure who did the handball because it was a kind of deflected goal. And then when you saw the replay, I mean, that's what your job is. You're a big centre-half. You go forward for set pieces. Lionel Men showed how to do it.
Yeah.
And do you know what? Isn't it amazing, though, that the set pieces that Atleti had, Alvarez takes them, Koke takes them. The quality and the delivery is great. But when you get that momentum, when you know that you're stronger than the opposition, it's such an advantage. And I played for a team who scored ridiculous. I think we got 70% of our goals the year we won the FA Cup final came from set pieces.
Such a mental thing.
Dennis Wise got all the credit because he took all of them. And got moved to Chelsea. I mean, he was a good player, but he got moved to Chelsea on the back of his 7 out of 10 goals were made by Dennis Wise. Yeah, because he took all our free kicks. We had 6 or 7 six-footers. And every time we got a set piece, you genuinely believed, and the crowd genuinely believed it was almost like getting a penalty at times. But you're that dominant and you're so happy to get that free kick or to get that corner. We've seen it from teams in the past that have a long throw and teams struggle to defend and try to give away a corner instead of a throw-in because it's easier to defend. And when you've nailed that down, and then why Lenglet is attacking that ball and putting his arms across his face when his only job is to expect and anticipate and hope that
yeah.
a ball
get your head on it.
Away,
yeah, yeah. You're literally there to get your head on it.
So, exactly.
Yeah. It's going to bring us into the Barcelona game, right? So there's a lot of talk at the moment about changing styles. I think it's true, isn't it? I think we're seeing there was a couple this weekend, goals in La Liga. I mean, there weren't many goals in La Liga this weekend. There were a couple where people are messing around at the back. But we've had a few seasons now where every weekend we were discussing somebody doing that. So as it happens, it did happen this weekend. You can know, because we like a narrative. Everyone likes a narrative. It's like, oh, long ball football's back. But I think there is something in it. I think people have. I've commented a lot of football matches, and they're mixing it up more, which is the sort of thing that you and I wanted, as it not be wedded to a system. And if it requires, you know, in this situation, is it worth turning the other team round? Yes, it is sometimes. Do you think we're seeing a bit? Is that real? Is that happening?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I joked in the commentary in the first 20 minutes. I said this is like a throwback. It's both teams were playing 4-4-2. And Atleti in particular were hitting the channel ball down the left, down the left, down the left. And Carvajal was out of position and the centre backs had got to get across and there was two up front. I'm not someone that wants to see 100% long ball direct football. I just think common sense and play when it's on. So if the goalkeeper comes out and catches across and relatively unopposed, and he can throw the ball out quickly to an attacking fullback who's on the run, and then they play into midfield, they play into the front. I'm all for that. I'm not suggesting for one moment if the goalie catches across and nothing, and he just picks it, stays, waits, and whacks it downfield for a 50-50. I just think that there needs to be a balance between doing the right thing. Now we say we you know, the right way to play football. They play football the right way. Well, there is no right way. There's no wrong way. There's a winning way and a losing way, and you know, draws in between. And you've got to be good at what you're doing. It's just about doing the fundamentals right, doing the right thing at the right time, not dribbling like Alejandro Catania, doing a double drag back in your own penalty box, dispossessed, bang, goal. You know, we still see it. There's been an allowance from managers who have said in the past, starting with Pep Guardiola at Barcelona, if my goalkeeper makes a mistake, it's my fault. You know, I want him to play like this. And even then, Barcelona didn't concede many goals by playing out the back. They played the right football at the right time.
Yeah.
So we've now seen this develop over the last couple of years where teams are now setting up to play out the back and then going long into the centre forward. In my opinion, still, that still has flaws because I played that game when it goes in. So there is a process. When you go direct to a centre forward, big centre forward, it's going to be a big centre forward. It won't be to someone like me. But there is a process of what you do after that. And I still feel a lot of teams are not getting that right. Some are, some not. Most are not.
So it's just kind of kicking it up to an isolated forward who then doesn't win it and can't win it.
There's no knockdown.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. There's no flick on because you're playing one up front. There's no knockdown.
Second ball.
Your midfield have disappeared into offensive positions to kid on that we're going to play out the back. You're going to press high. We're leaving a big, massive space in the centre of the pitch. And we're going to hit it to, I'm going to use Erling Haaland, use Sorloth as examples. And we expect them to be able to chest the ball, bring it down, have enough time then to find the pass to one of these offensive players. There needs to, kicking it down the middle is wrong. That's the wrong thing to do. If you're going to play that ball from a goal kick in particular, go down one side, get everybody over one side. We form like an umbrella of midfield players and attacking players around the big centre forward. Maybe an option of one going for the flick on if Haaland can flick the ball on. So when it drops down you've got bodies around to win the ball back, wrestle control of the ball over the halfway line, and then play. So you then play your football. What I see is players spread all over the pitch, the ball going down the middle of the pitch. I joked about, was it Elche last week? They did that. They full-backs pulled wide. Full-backs pushed on. Centre-backs pulled wide. It was Oviedo. And they went long by the goalkeeper to a centre-forward who was marked by two centre-halves. Wingers were wide. There was literally nobody in midfield. The centre-half headed it. It bounced four times before anybody touched it, and it went straight back into the penalty box, and they scored. And Oviedo was newly promoted, and you're thinking, oh, what are you thinking? You can't do that. So there is a process after that. So the teams are going back to it, but you can't, and football supporters in general, I do hear that, you know, a sufficient amount of supporters loved playing out the back and loved the extra football and the extra passes. But I'm hearing more and more and reading more and more complaints about they want to see an end product. They want to see the type of football Athletic played at the weekend, but being direct, being offensive, getting the numbers into the penalty area, getting the numbers of crosses into the penalty area, and an end product. People want to know how much footballers scoring goals and goal mouth action and stuff, rather than 1,000 passes and one or two half chances. So
I've got a new.
It's getting the balance right.
Got a new venture for you, Terry, which is, you know how we have set piece coaches? You should be the second balls coach or the long ball coach and go and get a job at Arsenal or somewhere.
I say at home, John, still working out set pieces. It was part of the thing I did as assistant manager. I've got a couple of set pieces that if any club's willing to pay me the money for, I can come up with.
Yeah.
It's the set piece coaches, why it's not a remit of the coaching staff that are already there, I don't know. It's just that's a result of so much money being involved in football that they can pay someone just to come up with some set piece ideas. But the knockdown stuff, and we used to call it the mixer, put it in the mixer. No one knew where the mixer was really, but
literally. I remember talking when you and I talking to Gaetano Mendieta when he went to Middlesbrough. And they told him to put it in the channel, and he had no idea what the channel was.
Exactly.
I don't know what the word is. I don't know what you're talking about.
so he wouldn't have known the mixer.
Yeah.
So it is changing slightly, and I still like different stuff. I like to see teams that are good at playing the ball out the back when it's the right thing to do, and I like to see teams that are direct and get the ball forward quickly and get players in the box. I mean, Girona did their version of it when they finished fourth. They played out the back, and yet they still got bodies in the box, and they look, a threat. So there's some different ways to play football. There isn't a right way, there isn't a wrong way, there's a winning way and a losing way. If you're winning games, it's great.
I don't know. I wouldn't have that there is a winning way and a losing way. It depends. Flexibility. You've got to be flexible, and also flexible matching your resources.
Exactly.
There's no point if you've got a load of big fellas who aren't brilliant or who are fast but not skillful. You've got to adapt. You can't all play the same way. Anyway, let's talk about Barcelona.
Hatafe had a good example over the last decade under Bordalas, one of the lowest wage budgets in the league. Why would they try to play like Barcelona, Real Madrid, Villarreal? Otherwise they're just going to get beat and get relegated, and so it's cutting your cloth accordingly. You at the weekend, Real Madrid scored two goals because they got brilliant footballers, not because of the system they were playing or because of how well they were playing. It was just they've got a lot of brilliant footballers that can combine or do something individually to out of nothing, to win a game. And as a coach over the years, used to sit there and think, we played really well today, but they've got that centre-forward on loan from Jermaine Defoe. He was at Bournemouth. Outplaying, when I was coach of Wycombe Wanderers, we're totally outplaying Bournemouth, and Jermaine Defoe gets two or three goals. And it was literally, so we couldn't afford Jermaine Defoe, they could, somehow. And Bournemouth were struggling for money at that stage. And you just think, and I remember looking at him on the pitch thinking, he shouldn't be, it's the wrong level. Clearly it was. But if you have the players, the players or player that can make a difference. It's all about players. We talk about systems and stuff, coaches. But if you've got good players, and Real Madrid are brilliant players, they'll be all right. Yeah. But it does need some figuring out still.
Right. We need to get on to Barcelona. We've done Bournemouth versus Wickham and Jermaine Defoe before we've got on to Barcelona. So let's discuss Barcelona. And a couple of headers. Was Lewandowski's a header? I can't remember. Oh, yeah, he's got Lamine Yamal.
Yeah, they weren't very good, I have to be honest, Barcelona last night.
But... Yeah, so two games in a row, which they've won, they're top of the league. So they won. That's absolutely fine, isn't it? Because we've been eulogising about some of the football they were playing.
Yeah.
And then a couple of games in a few days, and they get through them, and they win them both.
And importantly, the rotations from Hansi Flick as well. He's not getting away with it. They've still got good. The players that are coming into the team are still good. He's not afraid to give the young ones. Dro played last night. Pedro. Dro is short for Pedro. Do you need to shorten Pedro? So can we call Pedri Dri? Dri and Dro is midfield for Barcelona.
Dri had a good game.
So Dro Fernandez came in. A surprise inclusion. But Hansi Flick is kind of prepared to give them half a game, the first half, and then bring Dani Olmo and people like that on. And so he's kind of, the planning is good, but they're not at their best. But it is, his planning is good in terms of keeping the whole squad interested in what they're trying to do. They all feel part of it and included in the squad, and they're getting results. But they made hard work of it last night, I have to be honest. And Real Sociedad, you know, despite being on 5 points, they got their win last week in the last game. They do look better. And they did cause Barcelona more than enough problems last night. Probably unlucky. I mean, the last 20, 25 minutes, Barcelona were in better form. Their better, bigger name players were on the pitch. But this was a tight game. And it was against the one I played when Odriozola scores, a late inclusion, I think, because of injury. And he came off with cramp after he was struggling after 53 minutes with cramp. I mean, I know he hasn't played a lot of football in the last 5 years, I'd guess. But you'd think, he's not an old man, you'd think he'd be able to get away with longer than 50-odd minutes before suffering cramp and coming off. And Real Sociedad, they concede from a corner from Jules Koundé, Lewandowski. There's that brief moment in the game where Real Sociedad hit the crossbar. They should have scored within seconds. Lewandowski should score. It kind of was a pretty average performance from Barcelona, but like against Oviedo on the Thursday evening, they get the 3 points. Players are rested, rotated. And I'm looking at it now, I'm thinking, I wonder what the best team is for, the best 11 is for Barcelona. Eric Garcia started every game this year. It was his first time he was subbed. I didn't realise that. So who's the best striker? I mean, Lewandowski is still... He's a penalty box player now. He hasn't always been that. That's been a strength. That's pretty much all he is now. But I thought that was his sharpest performance this season, last night. So do you go Lewandowski or Ferran Torres up front? We have to talk about the game changer, the match winner. It was utterly ridiculous. Sergio Gomez came on at the same time to play left back or that side of the pitch defensively. He came on the same time as Lamine Yamal and got nutmegged twice in the first 45 seconds. And before the minute's up, Lamine Yamal has made the goal. Astonishing the impact that he has. Just lifts the crowd, doesn't he? Comes on an important stage of the game and before you know it, it's... One always become 2-1, and then it became 3-4-1 after that. Lewandowski clearly should have scored. There was other chances for Barcelona, which were all created by Lamine Yamal. So they've done well without him. The little break, they've got the points. The little break wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for him. And you're thinking, are they rushing him back to get ready for PSG? It didn't look like there was an issue when he came on last night. Absolutely awesome again.
Yeah. So you imagine he'll play against PSG?
Yep, I would have thought so. I thought he came on long enough last night, over half an hour.
Yeah.
So that was long enough. And he's only missed a couple of weeks. So with fitness, as long as his injuries stands up today, as long as there's no discomfort from what he did in the game against Real Sociedad, he will. And it's going into that game quickly. Both teams have got loads of players missing through injury. So PSG, I kind of get it. And the fallout of this Club World Cup thing is going to be interesting to see how the season progresses and how teams, you know, fare after being involved in that and a sort of mixed up pre-season where they got fit for that, then they had a couple of weeks off, then back to league action. It's going to be interesting to see how it pans out. But the fact that PSG have got about six players missing.
Yeah, but then Barca
and Barcelona have got players missing.
But they weren't in it, Barca, were they? So
no, exactly. So, but PSG in particular,
yeah,
got picked up, I think it's about six first-team players missing.
Yeah.
So that's a benefit for Barcelona.
Yeah, it's hard. It's going to be almost impossible to pick to know, I think, ultimately, unless it's really clear that all the teams in the World Club Cup do badly.
Yeah.
Or who went far. I mean, Chelsea are doing badly and got injuries, haven't they? Maybe there
is
something there.
Yeah, I think it's the size of the squad, isn't it? The work that was done after the competition finished, because there was the transfer window was open again. So I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, Real Madrid are picking up injuries, you know, left, right and centre again with players that were involved, were not involved. It's going to be interesting to see that. We can't just forget that didn't happen because it did. And we need to see the evidence to say, that was daft having that, you know. It was, Chelsea won it and they're delighted, but as you said, they've got issues this season. We need more evidence, but it's worth keeping an eye on how that.
Yeah, we're not going to. What there isn't going to be is a definitive answer. I don't think there'll be a definitive answer. But it's only every 4 years, so it's quite a long time for anyone to get their heads around the consequences of it.
That'll change because there was no. There was no Liverpool, no Man United, no Barcelona. There's other teams that weren't in it that they won in it.
So
the qualification process is going to be
just.
Teams probably in it.
Yeah, but there is literally no case for Manchester United to be in that competition because it was all the best teams. Well,
exactly.
It was teams from around the world and the best teams from Europe, neither of which are Man United.
There'll be a loophole. And those with a big enough fan base, those we're going to take the coefficient is going to go about 80 years.
Right. Let's do the rest of La Liga. We're not going to get through many goals, though. Villarreal beat Athletic Club by 1-0. Alberto Molero with a late goal. 1 point from four games and one goal for Athletic.
And this could have gone either way. I mean, their attempts at goal were good. Villarreal's defence was good. Goalkeepers from both teams were good. So it was a close, tight game. Molero, you know, an emphatic finish from him to give Villarreal points. They're doing really well. Third, 16 points. As you said, Athletic won the first three games. And we're thinking, oh, maybe not a title challenge. But out of the rest of the best of the rest, Atleti was struggling. And you look at an Athletic Club and thinking, yeah, well, we all know they've got talent and, you know, goal scoring is an issue. But since Nico Williams got injured, 1 point from four games. Mm. It can't all be down to Nico Williams, but he is, perhaps that tells you that, you know, how important he is for an Athletic Club. So, yeah, and on top of that, they lost to Arsenal at home in the Champions League. So it's, I'm looking at their game this week, their away to Dortmund. Mm. Yeah, Dortmund away. Not easy, not impossible. They compete. They compete in every game. It's just that they can't find the goals.
Yeah. Villarreal won three in a row and faced Juve in midweek. So, yeah, good luck to them. Elche, Terry, will be in the Champions League next season. That's absolutely 100% because they are fourth in La Liga. And yet everybody had them down struggling. All the pre-season predictions that we got from everybody. Elche were going to struggle. It's not like we made a counter case against that. But they beat Celta Vigo. Celta's run of one all draws has come to an end. How are they doing it? Why are they good?
Why are they good? I think they are a type of team we talked about earlier. They haven't got millions or billions to spend on players and the wage bill. Edis Arabia plays a certain style of football. They do play out the back at times.
Yeah, well, they conceded a goal playing out.
Exactly.
And
Iglesias, you're thinking, oh, that might be offside. They were playing out the back. It was a good challenge. It was one that they complained was a foul, but it wasn't. You're asking for trouble, you play that type of pass. It was in around central midfield, wasn't it, with the centre-back splitting wide, so there was no one defensively in position to stop Borja Iglesias when the ball broke his way. They play with the two strikers. They get the ball into attacking positions. They get players into attacking positions. It's only Barcelona and Elche who are unbeaten now. And that's astonishing. 13 points. Ride that. I, 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 you have to ride that crest of a wave of confidence early in the season. People, it's quite easy now in any league in Europe to say the three promoted teams, if you could pick relegated teams, because it happens so often.
Yeah.
But two or three games in, I'm looking at the evidence and thinking, do you know what? No, Elche worked really hard at changing their squad completely. So lots of players going out, lots of players coming in. And I just thought, look, there might be something here. They've not just sat with the players that brought them up and brought a couple, two or three loans in and not spent any money. They haven't spent fortunes, but they've spent some. And they've worked hard in recruitment. And I just felt that they did have a chance. Now, Andre Silva coming in just before the season started, that was, as an established senior top flight footballer in various leagues in Europe, gone to Elche. I like the stadium. I like the atmosphere. They genuinely look a La Liga team to me, on the pitch and off the pitch. I know it's so well-backed in terms of fan base. And they play good football. And Celta, talking about Elche being unbeaten, Celta haven't won a game yet, which is a huge surprise.
Yeah.
They could have done this, could have gone either way. John Donald River, goal that was scrambled in to on the 68th minute was enough for Elche. But yeah, that when you get promoted, you have a good run like this, you want to get those points, you want to keep playing games, you want to, because you know at some stage, it's going to get tricky at some stage. But for them to be unbeaten after seven games, a fantastic achievement from them.
Celta got Pauk on Thursday in the Europa League.
They're confusing now, the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Champions League, Europa League.
I've
made one or two mistakes thinking every Thursday is a Conference League night or Europa League night, and it isn't. And some are playing, some are not. In case you miss anything on telly.
Betis beat Osasuna by 2-0. You mentioned this already with Catena dribbling around his own penalty area and paying the
6-yard box.
Yeah.
And Catena's a big, steady, decent centre back. I wouldn't have him down as doing a double drag back just outside your own 6-yard box under pressure, trying to get away with that. He didn't. And Abde scores, Cucho Hernandez gets another goal. A busy old programme for Betis so far, and 12 points that they've come out of it relatively unscathed, to be honest. And their home form is good considering it's an issue because it's not the stadium that they know I've always played in, but it looks like home. It was interesting, Barcelona last night, I'm thinking, they're at this stadium. That's not easy for them, is it? They're playing in training grounds and playing at Montjuic again. And I don't know where to... Listen, it's been such a busy weekend. I'm guessing it's PSG is in the Montjuic.
It's in the Montjuic. Yeah.
It's almost like you need clarification. You get your ticket now and you go, well, where am I going? You go, training ground, the camp now, on Montjuic. So, yeah, no, good work from Betis. They're ticking along nicely, but they were helped by poor defender from Osasuna.
Yeah, right. Quickly through the rest of the game, we've got many more goals to get through. Mallorca, though, got a win. Are you going to lay off Arrasate now, Terry?
I wasn't calling for him to be sacked. I just thought there was a danger of the hierarchy at the club because they're working really hard at Mallorca to progress off the pitch. They wanted progression on the pitch. That's their first win of the season. They've had a little bit of a tough fixture list. They relied too much on Marici. But Mallorca, I don't think, would have had the patience to sit there and go, do you know what, we can't flirt with a relegation battle. We've put too much into this club now. We can't be playing second division football. This gets them their first win. The fixture list will be kinder to them. The confidence will be better. And as I say, someone other than Marici scores a goal. So Alaves looked decent this year. So it's a hard-fought victory for Arrasate's Mallorca.
Yeah. Another team that we all thought were going to do badly, Sevilla, Terry. top half, because they won away to Rayo Vallecano, who, as I said, I mean, don't take those intros as real opinion, everybody, but they do seem to have decided that they're having a European meltdown, Rayo, and I don't understand why. There's not time yet for that, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to be careful of that. I mean, on one hand, you have managers that get in the European competition and then say, well, no, our league, the league campaign is more important. And you think, well, actually, why is your league You worked hard last year and you've got in that tournament, and now you're playing the reserves.
The whole point is to get into Europe, isn't it? For loads of clubs.
Yeah. To do it all again next year. Okay. It doesn't make any sense. Ryo, I just think, I mean, there are difficult ones to put your finger on. I don't think it is that at the moment, because I don't see loads of changes in the starting 11. And I don't see Inigo Perez looking at his team thinking, I'm resting them for the game, the next game. And I see him as a manager that will, with a relatively small squad, it's deeper than you think, playing the strongest team in every game. And we all have this sort of issue now with they can't play. Marcos Llorente, Atletico Madrid, I think it's the last 26 matches, has played every single minute. Now, I joked about Llorente and Valverde being the two fittest players in the league. That's not a joke. But I joked about a box office, pay-per-view bleep test for those two. Because they always play. They're so fit. And I struggle to see the issue when clubs... I get it with the big ones that have got big squads and play Champions League, and there's not a lot of difference between picking this midfield player and that midfield player. There are key players. And I think Inigo Perez will play rest players in Europe as opposed to La Liga. So I don't think that's the issue. I just think they're suffering at the moment. And Sevilla, Matias Almeida, he's exceeded all expectations that I had, because I saw him as a coming in and thinking, are you sure you want to take this on? You know, you haven't got the players. You don't know who's staying at the club. You don't know who they're going to be selling. You know, it's all this friction off the pitch as well. Is this a wise choice to be taking this job? And he is the biggest reason. He's got them organised. They're athletic. They're powerful. And they do have a player. Alexis Sanchez played well in this game. I took Mickey out of that signing. As Piniquetta has been key, I took Mickey out of that signing. They've got a core of players of about 16, 17 players that he's organised and coaching really well, really well. And sometimes we underestimate how much difference a coach can make. So I think he deserves all the credit. This was a substitution he made. Acre Adams comes on and scores. It was 50-50. I was looking at the game thinking, do you know what, Sevilla hold on for a draw? Yeah, that's a decent result, but he didn't settle for that. Attacking changes, they get the winner. 10 points, that, yeah, I'm not predicting they're going to qualify for Europe, but hats off to Almeida for the incredibly difficult job he's got, and hats off to the start they've had to this season. They're actually good to watch again in their own way.
Two more games. Getafe 1, Levante 1. So it was a long ball for the Levante goal, wasn't it, that was really well dealt with by the forward player, then even Romero scores. Getafe's goal, bit of a scramble at the back post.
Yeah, and set piece, big defenders are up. Yeah, it's a typical Getafe goal. Both teams are... Levante started this season in one of those newly promoted teams. They got battered. They were 2-0 against Barcelona. Had a lead in another game and got pegged back. But 5 points, there's quite a number of teams on 5 points at the moment. I guess the last game we'll talk about will be slightly different. Getafe, 11 points for Getafe. I mean, they're more than happy with that position in the league table. The problems they had going into the season with unregistered players leaving, they'd be more than happy with their position in the league.
Yeah. And Girona 0, Espanyol 0, which you informed me, Terry, is the first goalless draw of the season.
And the only one this weekend again. So, 7 rounds of football and 1-0 scoreline. I think it's historic. And unfortunately, I was on COCOMs and it was a classic 0-0. It wasn't great, I have to be honest. Girona, just when you think there's a flicker of hope, they've been better recently. Good point against Athletic away from home. Coming to this game, they didn't really offer a lot. And it does look a tough season. Espanyol on 12 points. They'll take that point. They'll be looking at that as against a team that were playing in the Champions League last year away from home. They didn't overcommit. It could have gone either way, but neither team really deserved to win. So a better point for Espanyol than Girona. They're in trouble. It's going to be a long season for Girona this year.
Yeah.
And I thought I was going to get a Hansi Flick suspension. Thankfully, got the 0-0, and then I was lucky enough to do the 5-2 on the Saturday. So it wasn't too bad.
Right. Well, thank you, Terry. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you for your support to the Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL. If you want to get some exclusive stuff, because we've got a European round coming up. We sort of shared Fridays with everybody because it was La Liga, but we'll do exclusive stuff for the Patreons back end of the week if we can. And I'm sure we will.
Yeah, mate, the next Saturday. Go
Sorry?
Saturday next. I go Saturday next week to
Right. Okay.
back to Madrid.
There we are,
On Friday.
making our plans in real time. So we'll see you all. Well, we'll see the Patreon soon. We'll see everybody after the next round of La Liga. So we'll see you then. Bye bye.